CyberWorks Podcast. Learn anytime, anyplace.
Welcome to the next edition of eLearning Accessibility for Training Managers and Human Resource Professionals, which is part of the CyberWorks eLearning Podcast series. My name is Mary Kay LaFerno. I am the Marketing Director here at CyberWorks, and I'm your host today. In the first segment of our mini-series, we provided some background on the American with Disabilities Act, Section 508, and an introduction to the W3C Accessibility Guidelines. In the second segment, we discuss the W3C Level 1 Accessibility Checkpoints. In today's segment, we will be looking at the W3C's Level 2 Accessibility Checkpoints. Throughout this mini-series, I will be talking with Al Lemieux, Senior e-learning developer here at CyberWorks and frequent contributor to the online training content journal blog about e-learning accessibility. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Mary Kay.
Nice to see you again. Are you ready to get started?
All right, sure, fire away.
All right. On the checklist for Level 2 accessibility, first we'll look at what is classified as general checkpoints. Next, using tables, frames, and forms. And finally, using applets and scripts. So it says, ensure that foreground and background color combinations provide sufficient contrast when viewed by someone having color deficits or when viewed on a black and white screen.
Some people, especially men, are colorblind. A problem color, for example, is green. But whatever the color, you should use colors that are complementary. This is where we get into the sticky nature of these guidelines. Let's say that your corporate colors are green, or another color that falls into a category that is problematic for colorblind users. How can you remedy that problem? Also, what about users who only view pages on a monitor that displays only black and white? There's not a lot of attached in this rule by the W3C, so it's really a guideline. My advice is to use a common sense approach to colors. A good designer will have the ability to use color theory and color sense in order to select appropriate colors in a design. If everything is bright fuchsia, then there's a problem.
I would think so. All right, what about this one? When an appropriate markup language exists, use markup rather than images to convey information.
Well, a screen reader will read text and provide emphasis and meaning to that text wherever the markup indicates. For example, something that is bold may be read differently than something that isn't. An image can't convey such meaning. This is an overarching concept that relates to something that I talked about in the first podcast, semantic markup. Obviously, images have a place in web design, and this rule doesn't say don't use images. Rather, it's really trying to get at the use of information within a given page. Using appropriate markup structure is an important first step in properly conveying the meaning of the actual text. The use of block quote, address, strong, and other tags can aid in the reading of text by a screen reader. Images don't have equivalent tags to convey meaning.
Okay, on to the next one. Create documents that validate to published formal grammars. What does validate mean here in this context?
I'm glad you asked. HTML comes in many flavors. Giving the user agent, the browser, the means to understand the flavor of HTML is important. The information that conveys this to the browser is the doc type. The doc type is a tag that tells the browser which version of HTML is being used in the document and where the definition of that version is on the web. Without a doc type, it's impossible for the page to be validated. The W3C has a validation service for developers at validator.w3.org. The doc type shows the user agent not only which version of HTML is being used, but also what validation rules apply to that version. Getting started with web standards includes using the right doc type.
All right, I get it. Here's one I know you feel passionately about. Use style sheets to control layout and presentation.
Well, of course I do. This goes back to the concept of separating structure from presentation or content from style. Style sheets replace that deprecated HTML formatting tags like the font tag. Style sheets are also capable of more than formatting text. They can be used for page layout and optimal output. For example, a style sheet can format a page for use on a mobile device. Another can be used to format a page for printing. Style sheets offer text control that HTML never could. I can go on and on about the benefits of style sheets. The bottom line is use them.
Okay. What about Use relative rather than absolute units in markup language attributes, values, and style sheet property values. I know the difference between an absolute link versus a relative link, but I'm not sure what these terms mean here.
This one is a departure from the level 1 guidelines for sure. Most developers count on using exact pixel measurements in order to line up elements and position items on a page. We tend to be control freaks when it comes to where an element appears on a page. That would be the absolute part of this rule. If I tell a table to be 590 pixels wide, it would be that size. The relative portion of this rule says not to use exact units. So instead of the table being 590 pixels wide, it would be 60% of the browser window width. Likewise, for style sheets, you would use M's or percentages in order to size text elements. The idea behind this rule is to make the page more flexible in multiple platforms. Font sizes, for example, are different from the Mac to the PC platform. There are browser preferences that give users the ability to change their preferred text size. Being more flexible in the page design allows the end user more flexibility in viewing the document.
All right, on to the next one. Use header elements to convey document structure and use them according to specification.
This actually fits into your area of expertise too, Mary Kay. Mm-hmm. When you read a newspaper, you'll see a headline and then the body of the story. Some headlines are larger than the others, and therefore the newspaper conveys a level of hierarchy for the stories presented on its front page and interior. This is a widely understood convention, and it's used in advertising as well. In HTML, there are 6 header elements, H1 through H6, that are meant to be used as headers for content. An H1 tag carries a higher weight than an H6 in terms of search engine optimization, but it also conveys a higher weight to the user.
Yes, that's true. Let's do the next two together. Markup lists and list items properly. Markup quotations. Do not use quotation markup for formatting effects such as indentation.
Right. That also plays into semantic markup, where you don't want to use lists for visual effects such as indentation. A list, either an ordered list or numbered list, and an unordered or bulleted list, should be used to list textual items in a sequential order. Lists become a little more complex when they are nested. There isn't a widely acceptable method to handle this level of complexity yet, but I'm sure it will be coming in the future.
This one sounds like common sense. Ensure that dynamic content is accessible or provide an alternative presentation or page. For the folks out there who are not familiar with the internet, what does dynamic content mean?
There's a bunch of things that fall under this rule. The first is using the title attribute on links. The title attribute on links can be read by any browser as a hint to the destination of the link. The next thing is using the no frames tag in any frameset pages for older versions of browsers that do not support frames. I don't know why anyone wouldn't want to update their browser or stop using Internet Explorer 3, but it is all still possible. Finally, the rules that apply to scripts and embedded objects apply here, whereby you need to provide text alternates to those elements when they appear on the page.
The next 4 checkpoints refer to user agents and the control of various design and coding properties. So why don't you tell us about them?
Okay, the first and second points warn against using blinking elements without a way to stop them. Don't do it. Resist the temptation to build hokey blinking animated GIFs. To attract user attention, studies have shown how users interact with pages and avoid areas that commonly show advertising. The next point is about the HTTP refresh meta tag capability. You can set this to replace the current page after a certain amount of time in milliseconds. For example, you may have visit a site and be looking at its homepage, which only displays an image. Then, without any action on your part, the page switches to another page that displays more information. Mm-hmm. The W3C recommends the use of a server-side technology to push the new page rather than using the meta tag. It's important to note here that AJAX and similar technologies allow interactions that don't change an entire page, but only a portion of the page. It'll be interesting to see whether or not that's described as accessible. The last point warns against the use of pop-ups, which almost seems like a moot point since a lot of user agencies have pop-up blocking built into them. It's not only pop-up windows, but any link that uses the target attribute to spawn a new window. This rule seems a bit harsh, but in the long run, it's an important reminder to developers not to use pop-ups.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense. The next two checkpoints are about using W3C technologies. What do they mean by use W3C technologies when they are available and appropriate for a task and use the latest versions when supported and avoid depreciating features of the W3C technologies?
A new developer using the current technology and standards promoted by the W3C and other groups probably isn't using any code that is deprecated, but developers working on legacy sites with old markup would have to convert those sites into standards-based and accessible pages. The W3C has a list of HTML tags and provides information about which have been deprecated. Examples of deprecated tags include the font tag, U for underlining text, and the center tag to center elements on a page. All of these tags and the others that have been deprecated have either been replaced by other tags or more likely by CSS definitions.
All right, Al, I'm going to give you a break and let you catch your breath on the next one because it's pretty self-explanatory. It says, divide large blocks of information into more manageable groups where natural and appropriate.
This rule is not only about literary divisions of information, but also about how you manage form elements such as select items and radio and checkbox groups. For select items with multiple groupings, you use the opt group tag to surround options within a group. For radio and checkboxes, you use the field set tag with a legend tag to define the question. A multiple choice question, for example, could have 5 choices. The entire question would be surrounded by the field set tag, and the text of the question would be enclosed by the legend tag. Field set could also be used to group sections of a form. For example, one part of a form might be collecting personal information, and another could be about products, etc.
This is the application of what is called chunking, breaking up groups of similar types of information in smaller, more manageable chunks or groups. This one makes sense to everyone, but it's really funny how often it's just not done.
Yep, you're right.
Okay, Al, break's over. The last three in the general section are about metadata, site layout, and navigation.
In the head section of an HTML document, there should be a set of minimal or typical meta tags that contain information about the page's language, a description of the page, and keywords. But this rule also covers the inclusion of the doctype tag and the mandatory title tag. Basically, the head of your document should be well-formed. The sections for site layout and navigation recommend using consistency and predictability in your design to help the user experience. This seems very basic at first, but I'm sure you can think of several websites that you've visited recently where you might have clicked on a link from one page and were presented with a page from the same site that looked totally different. Or you might have clicked on an item in a menu and then that item disappeared from the menu. Navigation is the key to successful website communications. If you present a navigation bar on the left side of one page, then on the next page place it on the right side, you're doing a disservice to your users and they are most likely to get lost.
Okay, now on to level 2 priorities, applying them to the use of tables. It says, do not use tables for layout unless the table makes sense when linearized. Otherwise, if the table does not make sense, provide an alternative equivalent, in parentheses, which may be linearized version, and if a table is used for layout, do not use any structural markup for the purpose of visual formatting. What does linearized mean, and why is that important, Al?
By linearized, the W3C means that the table should be created in such a way that it is easily read. For example, a screen reader will read a table from left to right. If your table contains a lot of call span and row span attributes, doesn't contain a consistent flow, then it will be difficult for the impaired user to understand the content of the table when the screen reader reads it to them. Many developers, particularly in the web standards movement, are crying out for the death of tables for layout purposes. There's no real reason to use a table for layout anymore because of style sheets and CSS positioning.
Yeah.
I'll say it again, tables are for data.
All right. What about level 2 compliance when frames are used? What's important here?
This basically requires the use of name and title attributes and, if necessary, the long description attribute to better describe the use of frames in a frame set and their relationship to one another. A screen reader will announce the existence of frames and then read their contents. If a frame has no title, then the screen reader doesn't give the impaired user enough information about the frame and what it's for. Surprisingly, screen readers do an excellent job of reading frame sets.
Okay, on to level 2 requirements when using forms.
These are pretty much the same as those in priority 1. Use labels, field sets, legends, opt groups, etc. to better manage forms. By the way, most forms are created in a table to aid in the formatting of the form, even though it's possible to do this with style sheets. So this rule echoes some of the previous rules focusing on readability of the form from left to right and down the page.
Okay. What about level 2 requirements when using applets and scripts, Al?
Again, same as in level 1, but this level emphasizes the use of event handlers that provide information to the user even if the script functionality is disabled by the user. For example, I can designate an onMouseOver event on a link that would trigger a JavaScript call to the user agent's status bar to provide information about that link. This technique is also useful for hiding links that point to CGI scripts on your server. If JavaScript is disabled, however, the onMouseOver event will not occur. If the information that the onMouseOver event conveys is important, then there should be another way to present it. In this case, you could use the title attribute on the link to convey that information to the user.
Wow, this is all really great stuff. I know you have to run along, so that's it for today. Remember that all the links and resources mentioned today will be available in the transcript for this podcast located on the www.cyberworks.com/elearning_podcast.htm page in the Media Center of the CyberWorks website. In the next segment of our mini-series on e-learning accessibility for training managers and human resource professionals, we will be talking about W3C's Level 3 Accessibility Checkpoints. Until then, this is Mary Kay LaFerno and
Al Lemieux from CyberWorks. Have a great month.
CyberWorks Podcast. Learn anytime, anyplace.